This NBA season, make every three-pointer, alley-oop, and buzzer-beater even more exciting with FanDuel. You can bet on everything from first baskets and number of dunks to which player will drain the most threes. Or stack your bets with the same-game parlay for a shot to win even bigger. It's quick, easy, and you'll get your winnings fast. So download the app today and see why we're North America's number one sportsbook. Make every moment more with FanDuel. 19 plus and physically located in Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-866-531-2600 or visit connectsontario.ca.
Hello. Hello. Anyone around here speak basketball?
Aging Bobby Webster.
This is Adam Silver.
Welcome to the Confederacy of Dunks
Basketball Podcast.
I am your host, Freddie Rivas. And who, sir, in glorious blue and white are you?
I'm your producer, Matt Duncan. Fred, we were at game six. How are you feeling? It's been a few days.
I'm feeling pretty good. I mean, it was a bit of a rough end. And I think maybe I booed the people leaving early a bit too aggressively, but things have mellowed out, you know?
You did boo the early leavers. It was great.
I did.
Yeah.
Listen, Section 309, you know, that's my home. I got to make sure that, I yell sometimes.
Yeah. And I'll just say that Freddie's section is right by where the sort of shawarma is supposed to be, and it wasn't there. So if anyone knows what happened to the sort of shawarma, if it's somewhere in like a mystery tier or something, let us know, because I was so psyched to try one finally, and unfortunately we couldn't.
Yeah, shout out Cherry Street Grill, which was delicious, but
that was
we will we will not sleep until we get some answers about sort of shawarma.
Yeah.
If you're checking out the podcast for the first time, you're coming back. We are hardcore Raptors fans, performers, analysts, and just all around, like, you know, basketball nuts. Thanks for checking us out on Raptors Republic and the Rapcast. And Maddie, what other info should people, I don't know, ingest if they want to help us out or help us out. Yeah. Don't take the info for any other reason.
Yeah. Well, you know, go to RaptorsRepublic.com. Of course, there's lots of great content there, and, you know, subscribe and like on the YouTube. If you're watching right now, please leave a comment. We've been getting lots of feedback. It's great. And yeah, if you want to subscribe to our Patreon, it's patreon.com/dunkspodcast.
Beauty. Well, I think we can probably get going here pretty quick. I would just say, as I've been saying for a little while now, with my other podcast, Catherine Nyker, who is also a member of Raptors Republic, the pickup, a WNBA podcast, we're covering the Brittany Griner situation as much as we possibly can. If it's not something you know about, please check the pod, but, you know, just read up as much as you can. It's not something that should be ignored, and it's important for everyone to be informed on. And I think with that, we can get going here. There's a lot to talk about in Raptors land and the NBA at large. I'm going to bring on a first-time guest, but it's somewhat silly saying that because he's someone who's inspired me for a long time. I've been a fan of his writing, of his podcasting, you know, from back in the day of Raptors Republic. He's a co-creator. A lot of people know him as the Arsenalist or Corner Sniper. Give it up as loud as you can, even if you're at home alone, for Zarar Siddiqui.
I like it.
Yeah, this is your tune, like, man. Let me just apologize.
I like it.
What's up? I'm a big fan of yours, so I really appreciate you doing the pod. I'm excited to have you, man.
Oh, thanks for having me on, man. Yeah, I've been listening to the last 10 or 12 episodes since Lewis kind of clued me onto this. And it's pretty good, man. I like it. And the Brittany Griner situation, yeah, it's I think that's something that's worth worth being aware of, at least, because, yeah. It's funny because it's obviously, you know, there's a wrong person in that conversation, like, you know, Russia, obviously. But I don't think Russia gives a shit. I think they do enough things wrong that nothing's going to faze them.
Well said. Well said. Yeah. It's a pretty bleak situation that I think folks don't really know how to, I've already used the word ingest, but they don't really know how to receive. It's complicated, and, you know, it's a helpless situation, I think, if you're like a regular basketball fan. And, you know, as an analyst and podcaster, I think sometimes it's scary to wade into political territory, but, it's what's, you know, required of all of us right now. I think, yeah, it's something that the more eyes on it, the better, in my opinion.
I agree.
But, yeah, let's bring on guest number two. He's a frequent guest of the podcast. Great friend of mine, amazing comedian. I always butcher the show he's a host of. I've called it the Big Canadian Baking Show. It's not that. CBC Baking Show, Canada Baking Show. I think, listen, I've just butchered it again. He's one of the best basketball players I've ever met in real life. He can still dunk, I believe. Just a hilarious, amazing guy. Shoeless Lewis on Twitch. Give it up as loud as you can, even if you're at home alone, for Alan Shane Lewis.
Love that music still.
I'm so sorry. What's the baking show? What's the title?
Oh, it's called Great Canadian Baking Show.
Oh my God.
You got some of the words, the energy and the essence of what it was came through. And that's what language is about. You know, it's about just speaking and taking it. Also, booing people who left early. Don't feel bad about that. Don't feel bad. I booed through the TV. I booed people in games 3 and 4 who were just kind of sitting there, like, I kept saying this same phrase over again. I was a little obnoxious. I was like, it's not Wimbledon. It's not Wimbledon. It's playoff basketball. Make some noise. So,
a little bit. Well, you know, I mean, and I get it. People are, you know, trying to catch the GO train or whatever, but folks in my section were leaving with 8 minutes to go. 8 minutes.
Hey, you're talking to somebody who boos in the third quarter when they're late coming back to the seats.
Good. Good.
8 minutes left is, and that looks horrible on TV, especially on, like, when you're, it's, you know, of all the Jurassic Park where blob were the greatest fans in the world, you come into the third quarter and you see the entire gray seats, all like 80% of them are empty. It looks like Miami. It doesn't look like Toronto. Mm-hmm. It looks like Miami, and that's not a good look.
It's not. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to insinuate too much, but Philly made a big run early third quarter. I remember being at game 2 of the finals against the Warriors, and the Warriors made a massive run after halftime. And yeah, I mean, maybe that's like, yeah, it's insinuating a bit too far.
No, those are facts. Come on, causality, everything. Those are facts right there.
Right. Yeah, there's something linear there. Yeah. But let's get right into it. Let's talk some raps. Maddie, I don't have to do the existential dance. I know you're there. Please, good sir, give me your most delicious Raptors sting.
You're listening to Confederacy of Dunks or whatever. This isn't like a Confederate flag podcast, is it? Oh, Raptors. Okay.
Okay. I don't even know what to say anymore.
Who was that?
Guys, that was David Spade.
David Spade. Oh yeah. Very, 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 like, that's a very current reference. Thanks for the thanks
is that for a cameo? David Spade.
Oh, I've got connections too. They all have off-season homes and new markets. So I run into them all the time here.
Right. Yeah. A lot of vacationers, you know, the people who can't go to Muskoka, you head on down to New Market. Is that York region? I don't know.
Yeah, you got it.
The Muskoka of York region is what they call it.
Did you say David Spade is a current reference?
No, I'm just making fun of Matt because he clearly found a website where you could take celebrities' voices, but I mean, it's not really celebrities that people know anymore.
all celebrities that were hot in the 90s.
Yeah. Folks, all jokes aside, check out Just Shoot Me. check out Just Shoot Me with Brian Posehn as well, I think.
Good call.
Yeah. R.I.P. George Siegel.
Yeah.
Cheers. Okay, let's dive right in here. Zarar, I'm going to go to you first. I guess, you know, we can get into the weeds as much or as little as we like, but sort of from a generic sense, what was your favorite thing or, you know, yeah, what was your favorite thing about this Raptors season? And what was your favorite, or was your least favorite thing?
Well, I think if I had to pick like a moment or like a particular aspect of the season that mm-hmm. I think was my favorite, I think a lot of people will agree with me in this one. It's probably the surprise of Scottie Barnes and how he materialized into probably our playoff performer, which had the most nerves. So nobody really saw that one coming. Now that you have the benefit of the whole season, hindsight looks pretty obvious because the draft pick looks obvious because Masai had no secret about going into a length and strength 6'9" athletic mm-hmm. lineup. So Scottie Barnes made a lot of sense, even though the draft reaction to his pick was, it's on our YouTube channel. It's one of our most popular videos of this year.
Oh my God.
Reacting to the Scottie Barnes pick. We had a draft party. It was, you can probably anticipate what the reaction was. So watching him sort of develop, hit the rookie wall, and then recover post All-Star break, because a lot of rookies in January, February sort of slow down because that's when the college season usually ends for them and they hit a physical wall. So to see Scottie climb through that and become stronger as the season progressed, I don't think I've seen that in a Raptor rookie for quite some time. Mm. Maybe I'll have to go back to, I don't know, way back to see that kind of like acceleration and development that late in the season. So he was clearly my most favorite thing that happened. In terms of least, I don't know if I have a least favorite. I didn't enjoy the Raptors getting sort of bit by the same bug that bit them against the Celtics. You remember Fred VanVleet, Jason Tatum matchup really killed us in that entire series. We got exploited big time by their height, their backcourt height advantage. And I thought a little bit of that happened against Philly as well in some of the games. So I didn't like seeing the Raptors sort of succumb to the same problem. I know it's not the exact same problem,
right, but
similar problems in both series sort of 2 years apart. That was sort of hard to stomach. But once you digest the fact that you had very little expectations going into the season and this was a bridge year, it was never supposed to be a contention year, mm-hmm. and it ended up being sort of that, but not really, I think you have to be happy with what's going on. And I'll throw in that another surprise. I think a lot of people were critical of Masai Ujiri at the deadline last year for not shipping Kyle Lowry. Mm-hmm. They thought they could have gotten more at the deadline for him. I never want to speculate and see what was on the table, what was not on the table. But people weren't happy with how the Lowry trade materialized. And now seeing Precious Achiuwa become the player he has, you sort of have to say that trade, let's see how far Miami gets in the postseason, but that trade sort of looks pretty good for the Raptors right now.
So many good points. I've said before that Lowry non-deal is an elite non-move. It's an elite non-move. There was so much pressure. Kyle said, sort of goodbye, I guess, after the Nuggets game. And yeah, Masai's patience sort of just, and Bobby's patience, like, trumps all. Like, it's such a such a through line of this franchise. And, as someone who became like a season seat holder and I guess like more of a hardcore during the Brian Colangelo era, I don't miss any type of reactionary front office. And it's so cool to have a guy like Masai who's cool under pressure. And, obviously there was a moment where when him and Precious met and he a bit facetiously was like, "You're home," sort of thing. And Precious was like, "Finally." And yeah, I think Precious is somebody he believed in. And, also to your point with Scottie, I watched the Nurse presser from 2 days ago. And, he sort of said, like, this guy just didn't have a lot of 20-year-old moments. So, yeah, Scottie, I mean, I think if that's everyone's answer, I'm not going to be too surprised. But, Alan, where are you at? Let me also just say, yeah, like, least favorite's almost like a forced part of this question because I think we got a good answer from Zarar, so I'm glad I asked it. But yeah, least favorite and favorite Raptors thing of the season.
Yeah, well, I think Zarar hit up like a lot of different points that I really do agree about just about the season. Just not to fully go over it, but like I truly believe when it's a year where it's like there's no real expectation of what this team could be, and we're just kind of in this rebuilding phase, everything that was positive was gravy. But one thing that really stood out to me, especially through the whole season, was the resiliency of this team and this kind of next man up kind of mentality that kind of permeated from coach down to the 10th player. Like seeing Malachi Flynn get some minutes and, you know, get the confidence, get the touches that he really needed, and see the ball go in the net, and to see the confidence with him and see the things that he can actually do was great. Seeing Precious kind of figure it out. Scotty Barnes was great to watch. Even those small Shvee moments, like just anything like that, just the idea that this whole team really built into this idea and there is some type of a winning culture within the Raptors franchise. The fact that, you know, expectations are so low, but yet they did so much because they all believed in the same kind of thing. And it was great to see. It was a fun season to watch. Scotty Barnes, you know, I'm so happy he's on my team right now. This guy is looking like Magic Johnson incarnate, like a young version of him. And it's great to watch. And least favorite, I think it's, you know, through what we didn't have, seeing the things that we're kind of missing. And that's not on the team itself, but just because we didn't have, you know, necessarily the amount of arsenal of 3-point shooters to kind of keep up with a Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. So now we have to do these like kind of, I don't know, kind of chaotic kind of messes when it comes down to like the last 5 seconds of the shot clock. Just seeing that kind of stagnation kind of happen here and there, I kind of wish we could have addressed it, but I understand, you know, limitations as far as what was kind of going on through the season. So I hope each player kind of takes that to task when it comes to the offseason and kind of, you know, work that three in and you know, play and believe in themselves a little bit more so we don't have situations where we're just kind of, you know, bogged down with the idea of just like, I guess we just watch this person do a little bit of an ISO for a little bit, you know, just a little bit more, you know, 3-point shooting. And that's essentially it. And Chris Boucher, man, he made me eat my words at that last game of the season. He knew exactly what he was doing. You know, he's going through a contract, you know, he wants to get those big numbers, but good on him for really stepping up that last game and really showing out, not quitting whatsoever. So good on him.
Hey, I'm a big Boucher fan, and I'll add to that. You know, I've always loved the guy, and the reason that I love the guy is because Andrew Damelin, who's the 905 reporter for Raptors Republic, does a great job. You know, he's covered Chris Boucher throughout the G League, and he told me a couple of times that, you know, one of the hardest working, no fear guy in the G League, did not back down from anybody bigger than him, more experienced than him. Didn't matter. This guy stood up to everything. And to your point, Alan, he had a great game in a contract, a great season in a contract season. But did you ever feel that he sort of played out of his element? Maybe early on in the year a little bit, but more or less, he played in the contract year within the team context. And a lot of players kind of go rogue in their contract year. This guy stayed on point throughout.
Yeah, I mean, and that's even after proving he can score a bunch in the, you know, the famous Tampa tank year. I think at one point in the season, Fred said, you know, even if Chris's numbers aren't the same, like he's contributing to the team in such a more meaningful way. And yeah, Chris was one of the guys who, you know, he got a hard knock from Embiid and he kind of grabbed his ankle and then Embiid turned around and he got in his face. Like, Chris is legitimately not afraid of anyone, and he's a pleasure. Like I'll put my hand up and say that I kind of got lost at some point in the season and, you know, wanted some shooting. And I sort of assumed that Chris was our path to getting more shooting. I thought maybe it was like a Dragic Chris package or something like that, but I'm really happy we didn't trade him. I hope we re-sign him. And yeah, I'll say for me, I think that my favorite thing about the year is it just seems like every young person that came onto the team, Precious, Delano, Champagne, obviously Scotty, like they're all great. And they all sort of have so much promise. And I think if you really kind of let some of the patience of Masai and Bobby run through you, maybe you can trust a bit that these guys are going to put the work in. They're going to come back better shooters. Maybe not, like, you know, maybe Scotty's not going to be a good 3-point shooter next year, but there's a path. There's a trajectory that other players have taken on this team. And I think, you know, we should expect internal improvement. Obviously we're going to, you know, go out and see what we can get as well. But yeah, I mean, my least favorite thing, and I was thinking about going the minutes route with Nurse, but I've harped on that so much. And I feel like I've seen the other side a little bit, just because, I don't know, like, you know, when you overplay certain guys, you then allow other guys to come in and have a more significant role. So I think perhaps, you know, I've called Nurse, you know, I've said before, he has shades of Tibbs and shades of D'Antoni, where you overplay your guys. And yeah, I'm walking that back a little bit, but you know, this isn't a direct like call out of the fans necessarily, but I think I've been more involved in Raptors Twitter this year than I ever have been. And I think it's just a little bit frustrating. I guess like maybe this is a difference between being like an analyst and, you know, like a hardcore fan versus being like a passive fan. But some of the knee jerk stuff, it's just so frustrating to, you know, like game one, people want to move on from Pascal. And I don't know, it's frustrating, I guess. Like these guys give so much for the team and they've bought in so hard. So if you're having a nuanced approach to critique, fair enough. But if you're just really like, you know, a guy has a bad month or a bad game and you're going for the jugular, it's just tough to watch. I don't know. Maybe I'm too attached to the personalities on the team and it's basketball, so I should chill. But
I agree. I love Raptors Twitter. I love engaging.
It's funny. Right
now. It's super funny. And there's some like super thoughtful, amazing, wonderful, hilarious people on it. And I think as a fan base kind of grows over time, you know, you have a championship with the North campaign, all these different things, you become more of a big tent kind of team and you kind of bring in a lot of people. And a lot of the, you know, people forget the word fan is fanatic. And I think a lot of times, a lot of different fanatic people come in there with their I don't know, their handle like Scotty Barnes for life, whatever. And then they just like kind of have four followers and then are always tweeting negative things to every other fan base and knee jerk reactions to like certain players at like playing for a little bit. So it's a very interesting, I don't know, microcosm of the world, or I don't know. It's just it's an interesting place to be.
Yeah, it is. I feel like maybe I'm a bit new to that, you know, engaging in that way. But Alan, let's stick with you for question number two. And yeah, we've touched on some of this stuff, but yeah, what do you kind of want from the front office, like based on that playoffs? Like, obviously, you know, you can't. We don't want the front office to be like, we're playing Philly next year and that's the only team we need to prepare for, like, because that's obviously a little bit short-sighted. But you know, going back to Zarrar's point early on, like I think we saw some of the same backcourt struggles in the playoffs, and I think, you know, shooting is obviously an issue. But what do you take from that series forward, I guess, for the team?
Yeah, to kind of my point before, yeah, they're just kind of missing just maybe a spot-up shooter or even just set up plays to help different players. Because sometimes it felt like late game clock, trying to find out who can put the ball up and then a quick toss to OG and he throws it for a three. And after that, we just don't even have a rebounding to go back at it. So it's a little bit of that. It's a little bit of three. It's a little bit of big man presence in the key and just getting rebounds, whether it's offensive or defensive. The way the Raptors played during that series, you know, the first, like, I think we all kind of forget, like, we were literally one precious free throw away from game seven. So it was just so close. It was so close. And just a couple different changes, like minute changes like here and there, would really kind of affect this team going forward. And I think a matchup of having somebody as big and powerful as Embiid really kind of showed kind of the holes that we have there. Because yes, we could swarm you with our 6'9" players with long arms and long length, but guess what? We give up these options and threes. And we don't have to be as attacking, like, you know, white blood cells on type of like a foreign substance in the body. If we had somebody that can just give them, like, you know, I can hold this person for two back downs and then we can start, you know, crashing on this person after the second dribble, as opposed to as soon as they catch it. And that kind of changes the offense, because your rotations kind of pick up from there, because now this person's not laid on there and that person's not laid over there. And that doesn't open to like a Danny Green three or Tobias Harris three in the corners, and just be able to adjust that stuff there. So we can have like 0.5 seconds, shave 0.5 seconds off of each possession when it comes to like how hard we swarm up players and how we do our rotations would do like, I don't know, amazing things when it comes to, you know, going down the stretch next season and how many more wins that we could possibly get. But to be honest, you know, I'm very patient with this team. I'm very patient with this team, and I trust in Masai. I'll be honest. There was a little doubt that one second. I was really high on Jalen Suggs. I was watching a lot of the stuff. I watched him as he played in thing. But you know what?
He was awesome for Gonzaga. He was awesome. Like, you know, he's great.
He was awesome. And it took me like I think like 2 hours or an hour to just like watch a bunch of the Scotty Barr stuff. I'm like, okay, I see what he's saying. I see what he's saying. I see what's going on here. I'm going to trust him there. So I'm not going to be completely out there and be like, I knew Scotty Barnes was going to be this player. But I trust in Masai. I trust in the team. And I'm not like a 76ers fan who's going to say trust the process for 13 years and only come away with a second round exit. So I'm a little different from them. But anyway, shade, no shade.
Yeah, a little shade, no worries. Hey, I wanted Suggs too. I kind of wanted them to trade up for Evan Mobley. But I just like refrain from putting anything online. And as soon as we drafted Scotty, and you know, he was like, I don't know what the pre-draft ranking was, but I think it was like 6 or 7. So it wasn't that, like, it wasn't as much of a Bruno, you know, we don't talk about Bruno, but like, it wasn't that much of a Bruno thing as right away. I was like, people are freaking out here. You know, shout out Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors, because he had the head coach, forgetting his name, for Florida. And the way he talked about Scotty, you know, was pretty special. Like, it's there was a lot of stuff in that podcast early on where I was like, oh, wait a second. This guy, like, you know, hugs everyone at the beginning of the day and like has more energy than everyone. He's a special player. And I think... Yeah. That's exciting, and I feel like that basically showed up right away.
It's hard to quantify a winning element or a winning DNA kind of thing in somebody. Like, you can see it in the scoreboard as far as like points, rebounds, assists, but there's something about that glue guy that brings everyone together, where as far as energy or the little things they do, whether it's the extra help, it's hard to quantify that, and Scotty Barnes has it in droves. And it's kind of like a Draymond Green-esque player, where once you see them on the court, what they do, how they, you know, call plays on defense and offense and just bring up the intensity for everybody else, it's a wonder to have on your team.
Yeah, Draymond was the early comparison for me too. But when I started seeing Scotty, I mean, like, obviously, you know, he's getting compared to all sorts of guys now. Giannis, Scottie Pippen, Magic Johnson. Pretty good comps, I think. But, you know, he's also his own player too, which is exciting. Zarar, where are you at? You know, I guess, yeah, you touched on it a little bit, but, you know, what are you wanting from the front office? Not just as a result of this playoff series, but like seeing this team play 6 games in the playoffs. And again, you know, I will also throw out, like, Fred was injured and, you know, we had a lot of stuff going on, but well, what are you hoping for, I guess?
Yeah, I think injuries you can discount. I think injuries happen to every team, and the Raptors did well to kind of push through as much as they can. I think I agree with Alan that 3-point shooting obviously is a big concern. It's also because some of the 3-point shooters that we had on the bench didn't really materialize, Utah being the main one. He was supposed to be that floor stretcher, and that didn't really happen. And if you look at how the Raptors handled or didn't handle the Philly zone, that probably accentuated just how problematic not having 3-point shooting is, because as soon as you drop back, a team can essentially force you to shoot threes. And if you can't make them, you're toast, which is what happened in that, you know, in that game 6, unfortunately. But beyond that, beyond the 3-point shooting and the handling of the zone, I'd say the Raptors have to decide kind of what kind of offense they're running, because pick and roll is the most popular play in basketball. It happens pretty much on, I think, every other possession, but the Raptors rarely run it. It's not a frequent, you know, staple in their offensive diet. And because they prefer to go into ISO through Siakam, maybe use a high screen and go the other way, but they don't actually run any proper pick and rolls with the guy rolling to the basket like a lot of other teams do. And that's because they don't have really a big man finisher. Khem Birch sort of is the closest we have to that. And the best he can do is sort of do that little short, little hook, little push shot he has. Yeah.
The old Khem push.
Yeah, you know, so that's not, I think you got to have a go-to pick and roll game, or at least a above average pick and roll game to have some success in this league. So the Raptors sort of have to maybe address that. And with that, I don't know how a poor defensive rebounding team can survive in this league. Maybe you can compensate through it through offensive rebounding or turnover generation, but is that a strategy that will win you 4 rounds in the postseason by being that poor for a defensive rebounding team? I don't know. And that kind of leads me to the whole point of this experiment that we are running with these 6'9 guys and no center. What have we learned from this experiment? Have we concluded that we don't need a big man in the middle, or is the jury still out on that? I think the jury is still out on that a little bit. Yeah, so I would like to see the Raptors address, imagine if this team had JV on it, like just imagine for a second, what a force this team would be without necessarily compromising all their advantages in the defensive set. So I think that's something the Raptors can probably look at, just so they don't have to rely so much on forcing turnovers and so much on offensive rebounding, because teams can tighten those two areas up and that kind of dries out your offense.
Well said. Yeah. I feel like, you know, this team, it was sort of forced into creativity, but like there's almost like this gimmick element, and it's fun and it's like nerdy and it's cool. But also there are some traditional aspects of basketball, like pick and roll, like shooting, like having a big man, that are just useful, right? It matters. Like I found myself watching the Memphis G-State game the other night, just like looking at Jaren Jackson Jr. And I'm like, man, like that guy is so huge and he can shoot the three and he's like so physically imposing. And, you know, I'd love to have him on the team. And yeah, you know, even a guy like JV, or like just a more kind of, I mean, JV's interesting. I feel like he's always rode the wave of kind of like, I don't want to say lumbering big, but he's riding this wave of like what basketball is, and like sort of has made himself offensively, at least, like extremely useful. I mean, you know, Chris Paul, sorry.
The player that kind of fits that mold for me, that gets me so excited, is Miles Turner. I've been like wanting a Miles Turner, just a nice agile, big, long arms, can like chase down a three in the corner and also hit a three himself. Like some player like that would just fit just so nicely. You know, and he loves social media. We love social media. Let's go. He likes Lego. I don't know much about Lego, but I'll.
Sure. Bring in Lego talk. I'm into it.
The Turner comment is interesting, because he was of interest at the deadline for the Raptors, and they had made some inquiries on him. And it kind of what Alan said earlier, you know, like this team is so sort of gelled together. Next man up attitude, a lot of positivity, no complaining whatsoever. And I thought the only negative against Turner was that he was causing some locker room rumblings. And I'm not sure how much the Raptors org tolerates that. Maybe you remember that one scene with Goran Dragic, however you say his name, where he was like barking orders in a huddle and everybody was like looking at him like, dude, sit down. we don't need this. We don't need a lecture. We know what we're doing.
100%.
Necessarily like that personality. I'm not saying I know this for sure, but I think that's where the friction with Turner was. I had preferred Rashawn Holmes, who I thought would have been a decent fit, but I think that was sort of unattainable.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted Holmes big time in the summer, and you know, I think he went for like a 11 mil, and that seemed like, you know, I don't want to, people in my ear sort of being like, that was a massive miss, and like I wasn't sure if it was like a massive miss or what, but like I couldn't really. It was hard to defend what was going on after, like, you know, Baines and Len and whatever happened there in Tampa. But I, you know, that was the beginning of this experiment. And you know, Zerar, you brought up this this idea of the experiment, and I feel like the jury is still very much out. And I think that, you know, just because we're trying something new and different doesn't mean we can't complement it with something traditional. So that's sort of where I am right now. And I think I've landed on, like, I just watching what Thaddeus Young did to this team. Like, I like having a young core. I think it's important, but I do feel like bringing in a vet that fits in can sort of speed up development. Like, you know, Precious credited Thaddeus quite a bit for his own personal development. So yeah, I don't know who that guy is or what exactly he looks like, or if he's 6'9" as well, but I do think that is kind of like, I guess, what I want. And I just assume that, well, what do we have? Like, we're going to have like the 33rd pick or whatever. I assume that player is going to be awesome. I don't know. At this point, I'm like just spoiled as a fan. So I'm like, whatever guy we draft is going to be like 15 spots better than wherever he was supposed to go.
Yeah, but, is this what being a San Antonio Spurs fan feels like? You know, just knowing you're going to get this like really nice light-skinned player who's going to be so, so good in the second round. You're like, I don't even know who. Is it Kyle Anderson? I'll have fun with it. It's
gonna be slow-mo. You know, shout out slow-mo, doing some stuff.
You're great, man.
Okay, let's go.
Freddie, you mentioned earlier like how you were you know, you came on the, you started going deep into the Raptors in the Colangelo era. So, you know, with some of the decisions there with Capono, Fields, Klaza, Tolu, and these knee-jerk reactions, wasting mid-level exceptions.
Yes.
And you compare that era to today, where the amount of confidence you have in the front office is sky high. I think as a fan from that era, you especially appreciate some of the underpinning that Masai has provided.
100%. And, you know, I remember Masai even coming in and, you know, I agreed with the sentiment, but it was so like adamant about having a G League team. And, you know, just like these foundational things, he was really, you know, it's not just Masai. I think like, you know, Dwayne Casey, Pound the Rock, and like Lowry and DeMar, and like there was these foundational things that kind of like, I guess, buoyed the culture we have now. But I don't know. I definitely feel spoiled as a fan of this team to have such like confidence in the decision making. You know, to the point we were talking about earlier. Like, yeah, I wanted Suggs, I wanted Mobley. Whatever. We drafted somebody else, and I was like, you're right for sure. I just, you know, read a bunch of draft articles and I didn't watch these guys in the gym. I didn't work them out. Like, I don't have your, you know, metrics and stats and, you know, everything. Like, I don't have a whole team of people on it. At the end of the day, I'm just like, you know, an observer, right?
Yeah.
But, let's dive into some NBA stuff.
I got to give credit to Tim Leiwicki. Tim Leiwicki.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Sorry. Yeah. Well, okay. Before I jump in, we always got to throw, like, I'm always down for Leiwicki praise. Like, this dude is just basically like, guess what? The MLS is good now. Or sorry, the TFC is going to be good. The Raptors, you get Masai. How about Shanahan for the Leafs? And I guess let's diversify the food. All-Star game.
Before the All-Star game, we got to meet him from Below the Hardwood when we're talking to him.
Right.
It was like the core culture of Toronto was shit. It was shit. We're going to change that. And I was like, I have never been spoken to like this. This is amazing. I believe you, you know, even asking questions about All-Star weekend. He's like, trust me. Like, first he said, well, Maple Leaf sports. What's the first word of Maple Leaf sports? And I'm like, Maple Leafs. He's like, there you go. And he was like talking about different things that he wanted to change part of the culture. And this guy set everything in motion. And I got to give him props for two. So, Zara, yo. Good call out on that 100%.
Good call. And also, like, I it's one of those rumored things, but it's so funny to me that he came in and just was like, ding, 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 everything's going to be good now. And his wife was like, I don't like the Toronto weather. And he's like, ta-ta, I'll see you guys later. Yeah. And then
really, like, Mary Poppins, their lives.
It's so wild. Like, he just took off and he was like, honestly, I wish I could stick around for the championships, but like, you guys enjoy those. I'm going to go, like, you know, whatever, chill in Hollywood, or I don't know where he lives. Let's talk some NBA. Maddie, my dude, please give me your weirdest. They're getting weirder. So give me your whatever weird website you found. Give me that sting.
Final answer. Confederacy of Dunks wants to talk some NBA.
Yep. Not David Spade. Okay, I feel like the celebrities are getting even less relevant and more obscure. who is that?
Steve Harvey.
Steve Harvey. Okay. Okay. Shout out Steve Harvey.
He said final answer. He's doing the feud.
Thank you. That's a personal shout out. listen, feud starting in August. I'm the warm-up guy. Please come out. It's a fun show. I'll warm you up. I'll give you some Family Feud socks if you're loud enough. shout out Jerry D. He's hilarious. Maddie, come on in. This is our sort of silly question. I don't know what kind of answers we're going to get today because, I mean, it's a very real concept. Players do podcasts. You got JJ Redick. You got Danny Green. You got Draymond Green. After the, debatable flagrant two, depending on what angle you saw in that Warriors game, Draymond hit the pod world and sort of, you know, told his perspective. But it just got my mind thinking, like, what player, you know, doesn't have a podcast? What player do you want to have a podcast? And like, what's the vibe? What's the name? Let's start with you, Alan.
So it's gotta be Draymond's homeboy Kevin Durant. It's gonna be called The Burner Report.
Yes.
And he's gonna just take in calls and just cuss people out, like mid-game too. Like halftime, he's just like talking to people, cussing them out. It's like, KD, shouldn't you be like thinking about X's and O's? Like, fuck you, next caller. And he just keeps going on, and it's just angry, spiteful, you know, a little bit over the edge. But I like that about him. I like how he doesn't have to do this at all, but he's still like, I remember during the summer, there was like a Toronto Twitter space, and he was in there. He was in there. What was he doing in there? He's a multimillionaire NBA player. He didn't have to be there to defend himself, but he did it. And I like that about him. He's petty. So Tom Petty for the win. I got to give it to Kevin Durant.
Shout out. Yeah. So is he multiple characters, or is he just like plain face KD? Like, it's like KD unmasked. Like, is that what's, or is it like, is there many different personalities? Like,
there's four different guests or a host, sorry. And they're all Kevin Durant, but just different accounts.
Yeah. And one of them's like
mustache KD, just French KD. He's got a baguette. It's amazing. It's one of them, like, we know that's you, KD. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
One of them is just Trust the Caller. It's like a Colangelo character. Sorry, that's a deep Colangelo Gate reference. My bad. Okay, Zarar, who's your player you want to see podcast?
No, I don't. This is a tough one because I actually was going to go with KD too, but I want him to interview his fake accounts. I want the other person to be the fake account that he was pretending to be as he's interviewing. I thought that I think that would make some great content, but I couldn't come up with a player. So recently I'm watching the Lakers documentary on Crave. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys are watching that one.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And I thought the guy that we haven't really heard much from over the last ever really is Pat Riley. He's been a staple of this league for so long. But rarely do you see in-depth Pat Riley interviews. And if you look at the history of this guy, Lakers, the Knick years, you have the Heat years as executive, mm-hmm. as coach, prior to that as a player. I generally would love to see what this guy's view is of the league and how it has changed over time. Because what's impressive about Riley is that, unlike Phil Jackson, who was a great coach but a crappy executive in New York, mm-hmm. Pat Riley sort of has stood the test of time in multiple roles in multiple eras. So he sort of has some knowledge and a perspective that I think is quite unique. You see some coaches that have been around forever, like Don Nelson, coached for like the longest time, didn't really win much. But Riley has been more or less at the top of his game for. I can't think of a more accomplished executive than Pat Riley right now. Maybe Buford in San Antonio mm-hmm. was that for a while, but Riley's a guy that I would love to hear more from.
Yeah, I think Riley's a really, really interesting figure that's sort of in the background. We've all heard, like, you know, he puts rings on the table sort of thing. Maybe that's the name of the pod, Rings on the Table. but like, yeah, I mean, he's also like, yeah, he's a really, really interesting figure. And like we were talking about like non-moves earlier, and I was so convinced that when Eric Spoelstra struggled at the beginning of like the Heat years, that it was like, okay, here comes Riley. Like that, you know, he's going to fire Spo and he's going to come in, but he didn't. And Spo just sort of become this like amazing. I mean, I guess he always was, but like he also had the vision to let him grow, which I thought was really cool.
Also, I mean, you know, no matter what you think of the move, Riley was innovative in the sense that he constructed the first kind of like big three team with Bosch, LeBron, and Wade. I think prior to that, it was sort of not unthinkable, but rare to see a star kind of join another star who they have been rivals with in the past. Can you imagine like Jordan joining like Clyde Drexler or something like that in his era? But Riley orchestrated that setup, right? With the Jermaine O'Neal contract, with the Raptors involved there as well. And that setup, and then Bosch, LeBron, and Wade happened. And that was the start of the super team era. So beyond just innovation on the basketball court, he's introduced innovation in the front office.
Totally. And, you know, and also like taking guys in their prime, like, you know, we've known about, you know, whether it's like Garnett, Allen, and Pierce, like guys that are sort of not nearing the end, but like their winning window is kind of starting to close. He got these guys together like in such a way that was like, hey, you can win, you know. Yeah, there's obviously the famous thing, like not one, not two, whatever, but like they went to four straight finals. So and LeBron left and was still very good and still is very good. So I think yeah, but Pat Riley is kind of like a ghost of sorts in the NBA. Like I'd love to hear more from him, see more from him. Maddie, who's your podcast figure, a player, front office, whatever? What's the vibe of the pod?
Well, you know, this person already has a podcast, but I would like to reboot it, and that's Danny Green. Now, stay with me here. His co-host is going to be Nardwar. If you know who Nardwar is.
Yeah, I know some Nardwar.
He's well-connected. You know, he can get good guests. He'll get, like, amazing hip-hop guests. But I want it to be kind of like a Hot Wings type of show, but with Danny's snakes. So it starts with, like, he puts, like, a snake on you.
Hot snakes.
Nardwar asks you some questions. He brings out records and weird things about your life. And the snakes keep getting bigger and bigger as it goes on.
Sure.
And, you know, you got to see how far you can go before you're like, get the snake off of me.
Yeah.
So that's
if you
pretty
have a snake phobia, don't sign up for the pod. Right?
Yeah. And, you know, the video portion would be fantastic. And I think the audio portion, if you're just listening to it on a podcatcher, would be terrifying in its own way. Just trying to guess, like, how big are these snakes? So I think they'd be a great team. I think you'd get Snoop Dogg, like, all the time because he loves Nardwar. So... and they're both really nice guys. I think they would have good chemistry. Yeah.
I think you get the award for the busiest idea. I'm just picturing it's like
logistics.
The hot ones, there's like hissing in the mic. You know, there's lots of crackling. I think, yeah, it's good stuff. And, you know, for the snake lovers, shout out snake lovers. Yeah. I think they get a major kick out of it. I want to
grassy snake or
what's that?
The grassy snake or regular snake? What snake are we doing here?
Oh yeah, is it snake? Oh.
It's, yeah, snake from Degrassi. Yeah.
What's their band? The Zit Remedy.
Zit Remedy. Yeah. Good. Wow. Yeah,
that's a good trivia question and good trivia name team right there.
Yeah, I was gonna say the Pimple Remedy, and I was like, that ain't it. yeah, I'm going to go a bit Homer on this. I just think OG is really funny. And I think early on in his career, maybe it's because of Kawhi. There was this idea that, like, he was sort of like, you know, unaware of how funny he is. And I think that's like a total misread of OG. I think there's a Gen Z element for sure. And, you know, like almost like soft troll element. We saw with the, you know, I put you on scarves with Serge, but I just feel like OG, you know, he could talk basketball, but I think he could also just basically have anyone on and vibe with them. And it would be a really entertaining time. I think the podcast, like I was mostly thinking about the name. It would be called the OG Pod. And I think that's just a nice pod name. So that's where my idea mostly starts and ends. So
if you went name first and worked your way back.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Content later. If Matt gets the award for the busiest idea, I get the award for just simplest idea that maybe, you know, is not wanted so much. But okay, let's wrap this up with the last question here. Zarar, I'm going to go to you. After I wrote this question, I was kind of like, oh no, I think this might be a super obvious answer type thing, but I really feel like this, you know, post Raptors G State, there we're kind of in this era where we're seeing a lot more parity in the NBA. I think the Warriors were special. What LeBron was doing for a long time was special. And it seems like, you know, I don't think since we've had a repeat finals, if I'm not mistaken, it's been two different teams every time. But I do think that it's still like, you know, watching the first round, like all of the favored seeds won and, you know, no series even went to seven. So I think basketball is kind of remains as a sport where it's not like it's predictable, but I think with the volume of reps sort of thing, like the best team usually does win. So yeah, with all that meandering preamble, in the second round, is there who's the most likely upset?
I think the answer is pretty obvious that if there's going to be one, it's probably going to be Boston, trumping Milwaukee, I think, because all the other series aren't really that's significant. But the parity is an interesting thing. I think the reason, one of the reasons the league has become more competitive is that all the luxury tax rules, salary tax rules, they sort of take a little bit of time to come into effect. You can introduce them, you know, at a particular point in time, but their effects won't be seen until like 3 to 4 years when contracts renew and recent things happen. So I think we're seeing that now. And I've also seen that there's more incentive for players to stick around than just go test the market every time, just because the financials aren't as, you know, brighter on the other side. They're more incentivized to stick where they are. And, you know, the luxury taxes help penalize teams who would otherwise spend and sign even players on top. So I think that has helped and added and introduced some parity. I thought the first round was pretty competitive and pretty enjoyable overall. Even though there weren't any upsets, I thought most of the series were good basketball, like the Minnesota-Memphis series I loved. Even the Denver-Golden State series, which went in five, I thought that was – they had some close games in there too. The East was fun, obviously the Raptors. Even the five-game series that the Bucks won against the Bulls could have really stolen another game there, but it's DeMar, so he will, you know, kind of choke in the playoffs. So we kind of knew that. My point is that even though we did not see the upsets that you're referring to, I still thought the games were competitive enough and it made for a better first round experience than it has been in the past.
I think so too. And like, you know, a bunch of good points there. I feel like, you know, like one thing that, you know, I feel like history sometimes washes away is like there can be a competitive sweep or gentleman sweep. Like, you know, that Boston Brooklyn series, there was a couple, I mean, really, really tight games and Boston sort of has the gumption and, you know, coaching and just all around everything to pull that out. And they did sweep them. It was the only sweep, but you know, there were some really, really tight games, obviously at the Kyrie F bombs and like, there's just, you know, it was exciting. Like I should also say like, I love this era that we're in now. And I think it's super exciting. And yeah, I want to touch also on your other point. Like I think that this luxury, you know, the luxury cap and everything, it is having a great effect on the NBA. And I think there's also like an international element. You know, you got Jokic, you got Giannis, and maybe this old idea that every single player wants to go to Miami, LA, or New York. Maybe it's, you know, it's probably still true for American players, but I think it's kind of, I don't know, the lines are getting a bit blurred. I agree. Love that the Raptors have an international team. And it's an exciting time of the NBA. Although I do want to say, I thought with the Warriors being the 3 seed, I thought that was the obvious answer. So I'm really glad you said Boston because I thought we were going to get a bunch of like everyone saying Warriors here. But
Wait, what do you mean? Oh, the Warriors, they're playing
Memphis, who's the 2nd seed.
Oh, I guess. I guess. But
also, I mean. You know, I know, right? Yeah. Boston's a more interesting answer for sure. Exactly. Because like, you know, with Curry being, that's what I'm saying. When I wrote this question, I was kind of like, oh, like this might be like not interesting actually. But yeah, Boston is a more interesting answer. And I think, you know, after that first game, I was, you know, I'm a big Giannis fan. So I think Giannis is good enough to kind of get it done, but Boston's an incredible team and, you know, they're exciting, but, Alan, where are you at? Like, what's the most likely upset? And, you know, feel free to touch on anything we said, too.
I'm just so shocked that you gave so many compliments to the Boston Celtics in quick succession.
I know.
Freddie, I know. I don't know who you've become.
I've changed, okay? I've changed.
Special person who's just going to talk about facts? I don't like it.
Listen, Brad Stevens isn't the coach anymore, so I feel like, you know, they're a bit more enjoyable.
My beef is still on that city. I love Winning Time's exploration of Boston Garden, but it's hard to me mentally to go 2-3 upset because like as far as like upset it brings the idea of like expectation and 2-3 I feel like the ball bounces so many different ways and that's really why those players have you know or that those two teams are in those positions. So I can't clearly saying Golden State over you know Memphis being an upset because I'm like to be honest maybe they should be the 2nd seed right. But 4-1, I think, is where you can start maybe saying this might be a situation where it can happen. So I want to gravitate maybe to those kind of those series. And the 76ers one, I think it would be such a statement on James Harden's career for him to be missing Joel Embiid for you know, 3-2 games, and for him to kind of, you know, steal one from the 76ers. And for, you know, that third quarter, I almost like, oh, dang, maybe, or the second quarter, it seemed like it. And then, you know, he just kind of disappeared in the second half. So maybe something interesting there would be kind of fun to watch, even though I do want to see 76ers fans complain on Twitter. That's going to be so much fun for me when that happens. But moving over to the West. Yeah. As much as I love my Phoenix Suns. I love Devin Booker. I love Mikal Bridges, CP3. I'm happy for that entire team, but man, that fourth quarter, they could not buy a bucket. And if Dallas, once again, big if Dallas can shoot the way they shot that ball, if Maxi Kleber can shoot the way he shot that ball, and they can, you know, find that open guy in that corner three to hit those shots as much as they did, even though Phoenix was, you know, withstanding that, that could be a very interesting series to watch. And if that goes to seven and the ball bounces and Luka finally goes to his first Western Conference Finals, I think that's a huge stamp once again on his career. So either way, I think it's not, the expectation is there for the one seed to kind of take over, but I'm not completely ruling out that the four seeds in either conference can actually take on the first seed.
And I think the only series that I did not really enjoy watching or lost interest in was Miami-Atlanta. But yeah, even in that series, the way they shut down Trae Young was something to admire. And if I can make a prediction, I think even, you know, this is going to be Golden State versus Milwaukee. It seems like that's where this is going. Mm-hmm. And the rest is a bit of a formality. And so that might make for some boring basketball just because you kind of know how it's going to end. But I still think the act of getting there will still provide us some good entertainment.
For sure. Yeah. Friend of the podcast, Matt McCready, does like a finals bracket. And my pick was Golden State, Milwaukee. I think I have Milwaukee winning it all again. Lots of good points, guys. I feel like there's this who is the underdog is sort of, you know, it almost gets like washed away too, like with injuries, right? I was sort of surprised how every, you know, like just reading, like, you know, internet stuff, like how everyone was like, yeah, Miami for sure, no problem. Just because I feel like there's like Philly has, they have stuff, like they have talent, and I don't know.
Maxi
was awesome, man. He's like just like a bursting, like roadrunner style, like, you know, speed is speed, right? Like you see it in all sports. Who can actually pull it off? I think there's arguments for everyone. I feel like there's some stuff there with Dallas just because the way Luka can read the game, it's almost like they need something to happen with Phoenix. And I think Phoenix is such a well-oiled machine, but you know, you take somebody out of that and maybe they're a little less well-oiled, and maybe I'm just discounting Phoenix because they had such an incredible regular season. So, but yeah, let me I'm ask kind you guys of waffling on my own question. Yeah, sorry.
Let me ask you guys a question. You mentioned Maxi. It's just a hypothetical that came to mind. Would you guys rather have, remember the Kyle Lowry trade we talked about earlier? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you rather have Maxi or Precious on the team?
I've thought about this.
Because Maxi was one of the guys that we were trying to.
Maxi,
really, Alan?
Yeah, yeah. I'm going Maxi. Well, just because I saw him up close in that playoff, and he outperformed Precious, even though Precious had a couple good games. I think consistently, Maxi's the type of player that you can. It's not even about how many points you score; it's just about when you score those points and those like kind of dramatic points that kind of turn the tides and run, stop, run, start runs. And he's really good at that. He's really good at just not seeing what the scoreboard's saying and just doing what he needs to do in that moment to kind of get the point for his team. And he's money.
Yeah. It's if you ask me like early in the, you know, cause I was pretty high on Precious, like early on, you know, a classic, like I'm just a trust in Masai guy. And when we got Precious, I was excited. I watched some of his Nigeria highlights and he was bringing up the ball, popping threes. He was doing what we saw in that, you know, that euphoric Philly regular season game at the end. He was doing that for Nigeria. And, you know, I was like, wow, this guy is absolutely incredible. You know, going back to Pat Riley, I think that was a big sticking point. You know, I'm just going off rumors here, right? But Pat Riley was like, I don't want to give you Precious for Kyle. And Masai's like, that's all I want. And then he waited and he waited and he got Precious. So I think in that sense, I'm still on the Precious side. However, Maxi is, yeah, you know, I said speed, right? But it's the 3-point shooting too. Like, it's really, he's quite a complete player. And thinking about him on this team next to Fred is absolutely like, man, we'd be a lot more dynamic. And, you know, back to
next to Fred. Next to Fred?
Oh, are you thinking replacing Fred, Max?
I think I would sort of lean towards Precious on that one because he fits the mold of what the Raptors are trying to do. But Maxi is not a wrong answer by any means. But I don't know about Maxi and Fred. That backcourt becomes a little too small, I think, for what the Raptors may want to achieve.
Yeah, which then, you know, I'm going back and forth here, but then I'm fully back on the Precious thing because I love the Fred and Kyle combo, but I was one of those people that I'm like, it just watching those two guys play. Of course, they're fantastic. You know, they shared the floor so well together, but in that Boston series, like watching Jaylen Brown go up against guys that are like 6 or 7 inches smaller than him, I'm like, this is just tough. Like, we, you know, you have to be big in basketball. So I'll settle on this. I trust in Masai and I mean, I'm all about Precious. Like, I think he has, I don't want to say defensive player of the year potential, but he really has like explosive defensive potential. And the amount of offense he developed in one season, you know, and under the Raptors tutelage was just like beyond impressive. So I'll stick with Precious. That's my answer on this one. Wait, what about you, Zerar?
Oh, I said I'd lean Precious.
Cool. Well, guys, this has been such a fun episode. Like, I really appreciate both of you, you know, doing the pod, and it was a good one. And to everyone who's been listening, commenting, supporting, thank you so much. We're having a great time here on Raptors Republic. And we'll be back next week. But let me go to you first, Zerar. What's up? Is there anything you want people to know about? Anything you, you know, feel like saying?
No, I got nothing. I got nothing going on.
I love it. Hey, you know what? Some honesty is good. Like, sometimes you're just chilling, right? Yeah. Alan, what's up? What do you want to let people know? What do you want to plug?
You know, as always, Great Canadian Baking Show. Watch that on CBC Gem or Netflix for season 4. Brought to you guys Better Bake Long. Check that out. Wrap Below the Hardwood. If you guys want to see another basketball podcast, it's Freddie's been a guest on it many times.
Great pod.
It's a lot of fun. And Shoeless Lewis on TikTok and Shoeless Lewis on Twitch if you want to see me play some video games poorly. But yeah, there it is.
Sick. Well, I've played you in 2K and you're pretty damn good. So. Or maybe I'm just not good at video games.
Those 14-year-olds online, it's all they do. And it's hard to keep up sometimes. Like, it's stupid. I'm playing FIFA now. And then you're like, the 14-year-old kids are here there.
Muscle dexterity, man. Can't beat that.
Yeah.
And I can't do the dribbles that they do. I can play some good zones and I run it some nice plays. I like that. I go into the post. I play like it's 2005, like it's KG in the post. That's the game, you know.
We're old men and they're growing up in the Matrix, okay?
I play FIFA a little bit, and whenever you go up against some kid who has everything on manual mode, like no help whatsoever, and he's moving all his players, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah. When it's a pause before the game starts, you're like, something's happening. Some type of settings are happening. I don't like this. I'll just pause too to freak him out. But I'm like sitting there checking my phone, pretending.
Spend 40 minutes in team management. Yeah.
That's always a bad sign.
Well, you know, stay away from those FIFA nuts, guys. I've been playing some Fortnite, and I just absolutely get destroyed by anyone that has like a name that's like whatever. I was gonna make up a stupid name, but I don't feel like just swearing for the sake of it. But you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, guys, thank you so much. And thanks to everyone who's listening and supporting again. And we'll check you later. Maddie, if you feel like we're done, we're good to go, please just give me those words I love so much. Okay.
Okay. Listen to the Confederacy of Dunks exclusively on the Rapcast.